Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're also on BitChute and YouTube. You'll find the links in the podcast description. I'm also a podcasting coach because I've got four other podcasts with four getting to the top 0.5% and one getting to 1.5%. As well as being a coach, you'll find everything on bio.link/podcaster. Today, my guest, motivational speaker with a very difficult but story that is one that I'm looking forward to discussing. Please welcome Dan McQueen.
Hey, Roy, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. So I suppose let's start off and just let the listeners know who's Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Roy. So my name is Dan McQueen. I'm in Vancouver, BC. But this story kind of takes place back in the UK, in London. I used to live in London for the past 10 years. Worked there in a tech job. And I started having these headaches that were really horrible, and they got worse for a few weeks. I was taking painkillers like candy for them as my head was pounding. I went to A&E, which is accident and emergency, twice. They thought it was vertigo and they sent me home. They told me if the headaches were to continue, I should get them checked in an optometrist. So I was in the middle of the exam with the optometrist, Mr. Patel. He stopped it. He stopped it in the middle of the exam. He goes, "We need to stop this." He gave me a sealed envelope. He told me to go directly to Moorfields Hospital, which I did. Well, I didn't. I went home first to grab a Jack Reacher book by Lee Child and I bought a bite to eat. And also phone chargers. I figured I'd be in for a bit of a wait. I went to Moorfields Hospital. They ran the same test the next admitted to Charing Cross. It turns out I had a dangerous buildup of pressure in my brain caused from a non-cancerous cyst. It turns out I need emergency brain surgery. It turns out my life was about to change. I've notified those people around me, messaged my mom and dad in Canada. My mom was in the flight, like, going to be on a plane to London the next day. Called my manager and messaged a few friends. "Don't think I'll be in Monday," I told them. "Yeah, no doubt, bud." So I was on the operating table on June 21st, 2014, when my mom was in the air flying to London. Something went wrong and I had a massive bleed in the brain, a brain hemorrhage. They think the cyst burst when they operated on me. My mom lands and finds I'm in critical condition. I was in a coma for 4 weeks, but was in and out of consciousness for months after this. Things were dicey, touch and go. When all was said and done, I was learning how to walk, talk, and smile again. I've rebuilt my way back up, learned how to walk. You know, that took 4 months. Walking on the mean streets of Tooting Broadway, man. Do you know London well, Roy?
I've been to London, and I wasn't there that often, but I've been around Parliament and all the touristy areas.
Okay, fair enough. You ever been to Tooting Broadway?
No, it doesn't sound familiar, not.
All right, well, I'll give you one story about this, about learning to walk, and then we can dive whatever direction you want to go. It's about constructive optimism. And so I was, as a result of the brain hemorrhage, I was in a coma. And the coma meant my left leg had atrophied. It was bent at an angle and then in the coma. So I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair. In order to walk, I had to wear a splint. But the story I want to tell you is after I got out of the splint, I was walking without supporter aids. I was doing naked walks in Tooting Broadway is what I called them. So I could walk without supporter aids. It was kind of cool. So Tooting Broadway is what they call up and coming, which means it's dodgy ass. Think sirens, gangs, some drugs, some hecticness. It's a full-on visceral experience. I'm walking with a cane, I'm walking with an eye patch, I'm Bambi on ice. I turn the corner onto Tooting Broadway, immediately get slammed into by someone. I stagger back a few feet. Someone scurries past me on the right-hand side. Someone's been stabbed over here on the sidewalk. I'm thinking, this is a pretty wild place to learn how to walk, man. This is the worst place to learn how to walk in the world. After a few days of this, I was feeling really dejected until one day my perspective shifted. Maybe this isn't the worst place to learn how to walk in the world. Maybe this is the best place. If I can walk here, I can walk anywhere. This went from the worst to the best in my mind, and my mood reflected that. There's many things in your life that you're looking at that could be contrived for the worst. What makes them so? Maybe they're the best. that perspective shift and how I viewed walking into Broadway made all the difference. I began looking forward to my walks. Bump into me, crash past me. Good, bring it on. If I can walk here, I can walk anywhere. When you tell yourself what the situation is, you can adapt to the surroundings. That made all the difference. Close notes, Roy, this was an ongoing battle. I had a setback in 2015 as well. I've been making it back to work, which required another emergency brain surgery. I could walk again after this one, so it wasn't as bad, but I had to. I call this the depths of the human experience. My recovery is kind of like a W. So the first brain injury was down here. Back to work was back up here. The second setback was not where the first one was, much lower. I call this the depths of the human experience, where your hopes and dreams are snickered at, where your thoughts are belittled and mocked. You know, you thought you had a chance, but ha ha ha. No, you didn't have a chance there. So I clawed my way back to work, and then this past summer was part of a restructuring of my organization at Hootsuite, a tech company, and was let go of that tech company after 9 years of working there, which you think would be a pretty big knock, but I've kind of used it as a springboard to start my motivational speaking career. I've always been speaking to the Wolfson Rehab Center, my rehab center where I was an outpatient of after the brain injury, but now I'm moving into my full-time vibe. And I couldn't be more grateful for the opportunity to speak, because now it's like I know what I'm called to do and I know what I'm put here on this earth to do. And it's to share funny, interesting stories about a really crappy situation and bring light to a pretty dark situation. I'm loving it. It's stressful. It's really grimy. It's one step forward, three steps back, three steps forward, one step back. But it's like, those one step forwards are pretty damn good. And they're starting to become more frequent now, which is quite nice. I'm actually speaking next week at a high school. I've got a brain injury conference that I'm speaking in Canada that I've got to get a bio up for pretty soon. So it's all kind of happening, but I'm very much learning on the fly how to be a motivational speaker and how to make this work as a business. It's quite a complicated beast, as I'm sure you're aware, Roy. But it's something that I'm quite grateful for the opportunity to do, and it's been exciting. Hopefully that's a good intro for you there, Roy.
No, definitely. And the second time that you had the surgery, was that another cyst, or what actually happened the second time?
Yeah, so I had something called hydrocephalus, or water on the brain. So I have a shunt in my head to drain the fluid, and that blocked. So my mom found me in my flat unconscious, and I was rushed to emergency surgery. And I woke up in that hospital bed with the beeping noise of the heart rate monitors going off and the various alarms and cables wailing beside me. And I'm just, what happened? And, well, you had a second emergency brain surgery done. The shunt blocked. I'm like, so all my progress is washed away. I go, well, we got the block. We got the blockage here. I'm like, okay. That took a week to get over that. To know that all my progress that I'd been working for a year was washed away overnight. Took me a week to make accept that and move forward with it. The first brain injury took about a month. The second setback took about a week. The job loss this summer took about an afternoon to lunch. Acceptance, the fastest way you can get to acceptance, the faster you can make progress and strides on your life and your vibe. So whenever I speak, I always talk about like acceptance as being the most important thing. And that's not saying like that you're happy with the situation. That's just saying you accept it for what it is. It's not fair that it happened to you. No. It's not your fault, but it's your responsibility. I could choose. You can't. To me, I can't choose. Like, this is the way I'm going. I'm going this way, and that's the one way I'm going. The second setback was horrific. Like, that was really tough because all the resources that I have access to help me rebuild from the first one wasn't available because I'd already tapped that. So I did a lot of this over the phone or like on my own in my flat in London in Hammersmith. Mind you, my mom was out there to help me, so I had a lot of help doing this. Don't get me wrong, but the help from the NHS, the medical stuff, was more from an arm's reach at this stage because I'd already done that. And so that was quite a challenge. I should also mention, like, I had a tremendous amount of help through this process. My parents came out from Vancouver. Family came over from Vancouver quite a bit to visit me. Like, that's why I'm kind of driven to do the speaking, because I want to pay it forward to kind of help you out. if you're going through a difficult situation, share my experience and kind of show you, hey, here's how you navigate the ropes and avoid this pitfall. Don't go left here. Go left around the next corner. This is a trap. It's a bear trap, a honeypot. I've stepped in a number of those, Roy. I'll tell you that much. I can tell you a few of them along the way, and it's exciting time. I'm excited for it.
I love your positive attitude, because as you say, like, it is what it is. I mean, nobody actually wanted this, and it's how you react to any situation in life. So I'd like to kind of go back to the first time that you were there, because I believe you were 28 or something like that. Like, when you kind of realized, have you any memories of when you were going in and out of the coma, and then also kind of how you kind of adjusted? Because I mean, the fact that you had to kind of learn to walk and speak and just go through such trauma, I mean, that's such a shock to itself. But your mental, say, how you actually overcame that.
Yeah, so I remember waking up from the coma and being surrounded by my mom, dad, and brother. And I've got tubes going in me. I can't talk because I had a tracheotomy, so I couldn't, my voice box hadn't come back. It took weeks to get my voice back. And I'm trying to communicate with them, and they're like, I'm like, give me a pen and paper. Which I'm sure they're relieved that I can, you know, thinking that I can write and I can still have a function to do this, right? So I write on my pen and paper, get me out of here. And I show it to my brother and I go, expecting him to bust me out of the hospital. Like, I don't know what. I'm looking around, I'm like, this looks bad. Let's get out of here now. This is not a good spot to be. Little did I know I'd be in the hospital for months after this. Like, I think I was in the hospital for maybe 4 months at Charing Cross and 3 months at Wolfson Rehab Center. But learned how to talk again. The way they got me to talk was this nurse took me down to a park. It's a Kiwi nurse. She was a wonderful lady, but kind of a mean old gal to me. And she'd take me down to the park and she'd sit me in front of these people that would be on the other side of the park. And they go, Dan, they don't think you're good enough to talk, Dan. You're not good enough to talk, they think. And I would just, like, she just found out what motivated me and just hammered that button. And I yelled some profanities. I'll spare you and your listeners across the park. Needless to say, I found a voice. And that motivation of proving people wrong has been a big part of my vibe these days. I've transitioned that motivation from just proving you wrong to also helping you up of service now, because that's a big part of my vibe now is service. I found that motivation from proving you wrong lasts only so long. Once I prove you wrong, the motivation fizzles, it dissolves, it's fleeting. If my motivation is of service, I can get motivated by watching you grow, expand, and develop. And that's what I'm trying to transition my motivation to. I'd be lying if I told you it's all gone. Someone will make a comment about something like, okay, cool, man. Like, I'll catch you later. I'll catch you on the way up. Like, it's just like, that works. And that's, I can't tell you it's wrong, because that's what I've gotten back to where I'm at now. And it's like, wherever your motivation comes from, harness that. It's not right or wrong. It's what works for you, and use that, because that's real talk. But to a long way of going back to your question, the mindset was so key for this, Roy. And I really was conscious that, like, you know, this isn't fair that this happened to me. It's not, but it is what it is. And whining about it or wishing it didn't happen is not going to resolve this situation at all. It's going to make it worse. If I can accept it and take steps forward, I can make gains. I can take steps to progress myself. If I wish it didn't happen, I'm not making any forward progress. So accept it and move on. That's easier said than done. I realize that. But it's what you need to do. The faster you can get to acceptance, the faster you can take forward progress, the faster you can improve. I was speaking with someone yesterday and just saying, that's the game. Acceptance is the game. The fastest way you can get to acceptance is the fastest way you can rebuild and recover. Now, that's not easy, but it's simple.
And I think we all have blues days, and we just kind of, everything goes and flow. You're building whatever it is. And then there's some days they just go, jeez. Like, when you were kind of learning to walk again, did you have moments of, like, I call it like the blues days, the kind of off, that had you systems in place with yourself, or a kind of talk that would snap you out of the negative to keep you as motivated as you are?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. Like, it's like to walk in, I had to wear a splint in the middle of the night, and it would stretch out my leg because my leg had frozen at an angle in the ICU. In order to walk, we had to straighten out my leg with a splint, which is like a cast over your leg. Now, the first night I wore the splint, no issue, no stress. This will be easy, I thought. This will be easy. The second night, after 20 minutes, it was painful. After 30 minutes, it was dreadful. After 40, it was unbearable. It was like my leg was trapped in like a vat full of rats that were scurrying, burrowing, crawling, biting, and scratching my leg. And we took the splint off. I couldn't handle the pain. But I told them, if, you know, tomorrow we're doing an hour, I can make it work for an hour. So I thought. They wrap up my leg that third night. They go for patrol of the Wilson. Now, the Wilson's an L shape, so short on this side, long on this side. Give me the clicker. Set the time on my phone. They leave me in the hospital room, in that sanitary smelling hospital room. If you haven't experienced this, don't push yourself to experience it. It's not a pleasant smell. After 10 minutes, it's painful. After 20, it's dreadful. After 30, the splint is unbearable. We're doing this for an hour. This is insanity. I start passing the clicker back and forth to distract myself from the pain. Now, Roy, I have double vision, which means I get the absolute pleasure of seeing two of you, but means I can't see much of this. Eventually, inevitably, I miss the clicker, and it falls on the floor below me, 3.5 feet down on the ground. I look over the edge of the bed. I see the clicker on the floor. The solution to my problem is right there. But if I drop down to get it, I might break my arm. I thought, a 50-50 chance of me breaking my arm. I'm clawing at the splint. I cannot do it. It's done up at the ankle, not at the hip. I can't reach it. Help! Help, I yell. They're the far side of the Wilson ward. They can't hear me. They're down here. So I decide to flip the coin and crash down to grab the splint. Lower myself off the bed as low as I can, and I crash down. It's a yard sale. Blankets, cables, wires, cords. The arm holds. I hammer the clicker, expecting the nurses to come burst into the room to come to my rescue. They kind of strolled in 5 minutes later. Oh, what are you doing on the floor? They ask. Let's not worry about that. I tell them, let's get the splint off my leg. I'll tell you all about it. So a through line for one of my talks is, it's not what happens to you, but how you react to it. And that's Epictetus, a Stoic philosopher. So a couple lessons we learned from this experience. The first being, don't pass the clicker back and forth. Pretty self-evident one there. I think that's pretty obvious. Duh. The second was, do the splint up at the hip, not at the ankle. That way I can undo this should this happen again. And these aren't massive learnings, but they're micro learnings that compound. And if you can be better than yesterday, you can improve your lot. Little micro improvements are how you stack this on top of each other. Now the splint, like, that just goes to show you how difficult it was to wear the splint to straighten my leg to help me even get into the machine to walk. So with the splint, I was able to start doing the Zimmer frame, which is a four-post thing you lurch forward on. And you stack up that for maybe a few weeks, and then you move up to the Ferrari, which is a four-wheeled red racer. Ferrari racing red with four wheels, and you can kind of waddle quickly on it. Then we moved up to naked walks, something I called without supporter aids. I was walking naked. You'll notice a gamification here. I'm having fun. You're going to have fun with this stuff, because otherwise the suck weighs you down. You realize how difficult this is and how much of a long shot it is to get back to walking again. Like, walking took me months, and it was hard months. Like, every day I'm like gritting my teeth, taking a step, and just cursing under my breath. But I want to walk again. And when I see my eye dry, so I have double vision still, as I mentioned. I had surgery on the eyes last month to try and correct the double vision. It's still here, unfortunately. Well, I get the pleasure of you, two of you, Roy, but it's something I used to be really self-conscious of when I look in the mirror and I see my eye drag a little bit. But I always remind myself that I can walk. So I kind of counteract that negative self-talk. Well, at least you can walk, dude, because that was a lot crappier when you couldn't walk. Yeah, it was a lot worse than a little bit of an eye drag. Like, I can't even do the eye drag. I used to wear an eye patch too. So that's like, that was quite the look, right? The eye patch. I can't deal with the eye patch anymore. I like the periphery vision I get. But it's the mindset's the key thing here, Roy. It's a long way of answering your question. If you don't have your mindset right, you're finished. And you got to think, it's not what happens to you, but how you react to it matters. And that's kind of the mindset you got to keep ingrained with you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And with, I think, was it Hootsuite that you were with during that time? But basically, you were working for a company. Were they supporting you? Because, I mean, it wasn't the case if you were out for a couple of weeks. You were out for a long time. Was there the fear of, you know, I don't know, were you renting or had a house or a mortgage or whatever, but still just life in, as well as medical bills. Was there that element as well over your head?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Roy. Hootsuite was phenomenal. My mom often says the doctor saved my life, but Hootsuite let me get my life back. Hootsuite stood by me this the whole way. They were there on long-term disability, still got paid, made sure I could make my rent payments and allow me to ramp back up at a very slow pace. I started off with 2 days a week, then three, then four. I capped it at four, which if you got the opportunity to, I'd recommend, because 4 days a week is a pretty wicked workflow. I'm not going to lie to you. But Hootsuite was phenomenal through this, and they really were patient with me getting back. And when someone tells you, hey, take your time, we got you, you come back when you're ready, we got you no matter what. Like, I would walk through a wall for that company. Because that kind of loyalty, when you got nothing, man, when you're flat on your back, fighting for your next one, for your next breath, for your next step, someone tells you, hey, take your time, come back when you're ready, we got you no matter what. Like, yeah, man, I mess with you. Like, that's like, that's loyalty that you can't even imagine how much that means to you. Like, I got let go from that job this past summer, man. I got nothing but love for that company, what they did for my family. Nothing but love for them, man.
Beautiful. And because I remember when I was in my early 20s, I had a back problem that I believe it came to stress, but I tried everything. I was doing epidural, the whole lot. I tried acupuncture and everything, and in the end got the operation. And basically, you had, like, once the holiday period ended, they stopped paying me, even though I had made them a lot of money with the projects I was running. So you were very lucky, because a lot of companies, you're just a number and they don't really care about you. So I commend Hootsuite for actually, because it was a very tough period for you, and just to have them in your corner, it takes away that fear.
Oh, I can't even imagine this. Like, they were so good to me and my family. And like, I came back out of rehab. There's a great photo of me with a cane and an eye patch in victory mode. And then the next day or that night, I had a party at Hootsuite, the Hootsuite Christmas party. I was on a boat and it was a Peaky Blinders theme. So I was ducked up in a nice poor boy hat and nice eye patch and a good cane style. It was a great day. I was at a rehab, but I got to suggle with the mates. It was wonderful. They're phenomenal to me. So thanks for bringing that up, Roy.
And what about, because I mean, obviously your parents weren't living in the same country that you were with. So that in itself, like, did they stay long term when they actually moved over? And like, I mean, obviously it was probably hard there and then, but you're probably able to have the conversation later on how it was. But it must have been, especially for your mother, because normally the mothers are very close with the sons anyway, like, yeah, for them to go through it as well. To be witnessing their son to actually be going through this whole ordeal.
Yeah, so both my parents came out, or my mom came out for over a year. My aunt lives in London, so she stayed with my aunt for a while. But she was out there and, you know, visiting me in the Wolfson every day, which was in Tooting Broadway, and they were in West London, so that was like an hour tube journey every day. And they'd come visit me and be there for rehab and then help me rebuild quite a lot, and phenomenal support. Like, it was amazing. I got this, well, I don't know if it's great, but I got this text message. The last text message I sent my mom before I went into emergency surgery. It goes, "See you soon, mom. Think I'll have a new haircut next time I see you." And that's showing a lot. That's just kind of showing a little bit of cheek, a little bit of class. But like, I was terrified, but I'm very aware this could be the last text message you write. But mom writes back, "You'll be even cuter. Hospital's in your neighborhood. Mom and dad sending hugs." That stoic through line we talked about of, it's not what happens to you, but how you react to it. Mom was phenomenal through this. And so was dad. Like, they both came out to visit me, or to live in London and help me go to rehab. But like, this was like a full court press here. We had to really attack this full on and dive into it. And a lot of friends visited me from Vancouver as well. That made a big difference, because I'd see them and I'd be motivated to show them I can improve and be better. Like, I remember a few friends of mine came over to visit me, and they went to London for a few days and went to Ireland for a week or 2 weeks. When they came back, I was walking again, which is a big step. And I was like, yeah, I want to show Claire that I'm walking again now. Like, this is kind of cool. And that's that motivated me to show them, you know, how good I can be and how much I'm trying here, because I used to never try that hard. I used to never show that I tried hard. I'd always try hard, but I never show that I tried hard because I want to be cool and blasé. And now it's like the opposite. I'm like, I don't care what I do. As long as I'm trying hard, then I'm, and I can live with myself, I'm fine with that. Now everything is like, how much effort did you put in? Did you put in enough effort? Because if you did, the result doesn't matter. That'll come eventually. But as long as you put the effort in, that's what I want to do.
Excellent. And like, because it's a hard, when you're going around doing speeches about this, like, it's very hard. It's a difficult ordeal that you went through. But like, I've seen one of the videos and you're getting your message across, but with a very positive attitude. And if, like, I love your sense of humor, you know, even just during this conversation, the little things that you're throwing in. But I could see how much connected the audience were to you. And then you got a standing ovation afterwards. But like, just through your journey, I mean, you're able, there's not many people can do that, because a lot of people, when they're kind of doing the story like that, they do it in a negative or in a kind of poor me kind of scenario, whereas you're not. You're actually, you have a really beautiful message with the stories that you're telling.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Roy. That means a lot. Like, it's look, I've got a wicked dark sense of humor and like a wicked if you can't laugh at this, then what can you do, right? Like, it's dark, it's grimy. Like, if you can't, I also, you know, say some off-color stuff. And it's like, if you get offended by that, it's like, are you not listening to the story? Like, I'm telling you, I was in that coma for 4 weeks. Like, do you not know how much of a hell that was to be in? Like, the depths of the human experience, and you're worried about, like, me saying this word here? Like, it's, I'm just trying to wear it on my sleeve and tell you what it's like to feel this experience, because you're probably not going to feel this experience. Odds are, no, you're not going to face a brain hemorrhage. And this isn't for brain, specifically for brain injured people, but like, in life, you're going to face some sort of setback, something that needs you to be resilient. How are you going to address that? How are you going to face that adversity? I've got a roadmap of how to navigate adversity after adversity, like the setback, the brain hemorrhage, the setback, the job loss, not to mention a whole nother stuff along the way that's not even going to mention, but like, three big moments in my life where I've navigated this stuff. And it's like, I can tell you that being woes me and poopy panties and upset and jaded about it is not the way to go. Like, it's not the way to go. The way through this is through it, but you got to go through it. It's like speaking. Like, I'm not a natural speaker. Like, I'm not like unafraid to speak. I'm very aware of speaking and very conscious of the audience and the environment, and I'm getting better at it, but I choose the fear and I go anyways, because I need that experience. Like, I kind of thrive off these high pressure environments where the stakes are quite high. And speaking is one of those where I'm in a short period of time, I've got like a massive high stakes. You know, if you stumble, people are going to notice that you stumble, but like, it kind of makes you alive for that hour talk, whatever you give. But yeah, I think humor is a big part of my vibe. And I try to connect the stories in a way that's relatable for you as someone who's not been through the experience. So there's been a couple times where I talk about, like, I had a conversation yesterday about a gentleman asked me, how do you be resilient? And I kind of came up with this hack on the spot yesterday. I go, by keeping promises to yourself. If you keep enough promises to yourself, you realize that you can successfully navigate a difficult situation. So if I say I'm going to go meditate 2 minutes a day for this week, then you do that 2 minutes a day for the week. And then the next week you do 4 minutes. And then you can look back at that previous week and be like, I did that 2 minutes each day for this week. So I know I've got a use case that I'm resilient because I've done this. And the next week you do that and you do like a walk a block, a walk two blocks, and you ramp it up gradually. But you got a whole use case here of a track of evidence to showcase that you can be resilient and you are resilient. Now it's like, what are you going to come at me with that I can't overcome? Not to sound like bulletproof, but what are you going to come at me with that I can't overcome? Like, I've faced just the depths of the human experience, right? The darkest of the dark, and I'm still here smiling, man. And that's the message I want to showcase, is it's like, it's not what happens to you, but how you react to it. And like, that's a message that I think I'm driven to share, because it'd be a shame to leave these lessons learned on the sidelines of life. If I'm not a speaker, if I don't share these lessons, then it's like this dies with me, or this just stays with me. And it's like, well, you can have this too at a small, meaningful cost.
Very good. And have you ever thought about writing a book? Because, you know, you've great stories and help for, because sometimes people might have something similar and it would definitely help. But I think just overcoming adversity, you know, it's pure mindset, but the way that you're actually talking about it and what you've done would definitely help a lot of people.
Yeah, thank you. The book, maybe. I mean, it's right now I'm trying to get the speaking business going, and like, that's going to take a lot of work, and a book's like a lot of effort with not getting the payback for a long time. And I think my benefits can be held better through speaking and podcasts. I've been doing a lot of podcasts of late, a lot of speaking gigs. Like, that's the avenue I'm going to go down for now, and maybe the books later, but like, it's not top of mind just yet.
Well, what you can do, and it'll help maybe for some listeners as well that are kind of doing something similar, what you can do is you can use like OtterDeath AI for all the podcasts you've been in, and you can extract all the conversations, and that's a lot of the actual text for a book that's there, because the stories are there, and you can actually even get somebody else to put it together. That would because you've discussed obviously a lot more over all the podcasts that you've done, but that's just one way of doing it. Because I think, especially for the speaking, you know, when you want to build your career as a speaker, the book will actually help you. I believe, just from talking to so many people over the show and seeing how it's done. And also, it will live on as well to help a lot more.
That's true. Thank you for that, Roy.
So I suppose, sometimes it's the small things that actually we realize. So what things now that you kind of really appreciate? Because sometimes it's like, I mean, for me personally, I lost everything. I went through a financial thing where I lost a whole lot. And I kind of, then I realized I don't need all this stuff. And it's kind of, even though, you know, we go through adversity, kind of later then it's like appreciating everything in life and just being at one with nature and things like that. And I'm just curious with you, because you did go through, it wasn't a short time. It was a long time that what you went through. But now, what is it that you're kind of going, ooh, I really appreciate that you mightn't have prior to anything happening?
Yeah, I think like I just don't take things for granted anymore. Like, I'm not. Life happened pretty easy for me before this happened, like girls, friends, work. Like, I had a pretty easy, happy, lucky kind of vibe, and things just kind of fell into place for me. Now I'm much more intentional with my day and how I spend my time and how I show up. And I still am working on showing appreciation at times and, you know, navigating this world. But I guess relationships are key. Friends that have long, you can never make old or new old best friends. So nurturing those relationships is so key for me to keep those going and keeping that alive, because it's really difficult to keep those if you let them lapse. And I'm trying to let people know, like, hey man, I really appreciate you. Like, that this friendship means a lot to me. Like, you share old stories, and it's fun to just kind of reconnect with friends like that. But like, that's something I maybe didn't appreciate as much. And I also lived abroad for a long time too, right? I was in London for 10 years, Sweden for a year before that. So like, moving back to Vancouver was quite interesting, coming back to Vancouver and kind of reintegrating back into Vancouver life here. It's quite different from what I remember, but that's okay. It's not supposed to be the same, because it'd be weird if it was the same. But it's reconnecting with friends and stuff is quite big for me, and maintaining those relationships is quite important now compared to what we're in. Material things just don't mean anything to me, really.
Brilliant. Oh, excellent. Listen, Dan, thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. You might let people know, how can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, thank you. So mcqueendan.com is my website. I'd recommend going there. You can hit a contact form. It's in the process of being built. It should be done in 2 weeks' time. Or mcqueendan.com or mcqueendan on Instagram would be great too. MacQueenDan. on Instagram. You can direct message me there for speaking gigs. I've spoken for quite a few clients in the UK and I guess in Europe as well. And also some clients in North America. So I can happen to do the time zone there. It's a bit early my time, but it's afternoon your time. So it's fine. I'm driven to speak. And I promise you this, man, I'll change the room. Like I'll change the room on how you view stuff. Like some of the stories I share, the perspective I can offer your group will change the way they look at their setback, change the way they look at their injury, their cold call they have to make. I did a talk for Spendesk, a fintech company based in London, actually. And I was talking with a sales manager. Then he goes, Dan, you should for sure be speaking with sales teams because the mindset that you can share with the sales reps is so key because sales is a mindset game. And if you can get perspective on stuff and just understand, you know what? I got to call Jill and she's not having a good day and she's rooting me out. And I understand, you know, this is my one snapshot into Jill. Thank goodness. No offense, Jill, but thanks goodness I only have to deal with her for this one time. This is my life. I just have to deal with Jill for this one second. My life's back to this normal stuff here. It's just this one interaction with Jill. And like when you get that perspective, like they're not mad at you. They're just venting on the situation and you would just happen to be the one calling them. That makes a big difference. And when you can shift that perspective, you can make a big difference there. I'd love to come speak for your group and both online and in person. But that's probably the best way to get a hold of me, McQueenDan.com.
Oh, excellent. Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, Dan. I'll make sure I put the link spot in the audio and the video. So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com or on BitChute and YouTube. And you can find everything about my other podcasts and my podcast coaching by that link /podcaster. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, share with your friends. Until next week, take care.